My name is Sandra Matz, and I'm a computational social scientist and professor at Columbia University. I've spent the last 10 years studying the ability of algorithms to penetrate our minds and decode our psychology, and I've collected the lessons I learned in my latest book, Mind Masters, the Data-Driven Science of Predicting and Changing Human Behavior. Here are five of the book's key insights. Insight number one, we all live in a digital village. I grew up in a tiny village of 500 people in the southwest corner of Germany, and my experience there was very much shaped by the other 499 residents, because they knew everything about me. They knew what music I was into, who I was dating, and what I was doing on weekends. And they put together these pieces of my existence to construct a very intimate picture of my inner mental life, my hopes, dreams, fears, and aspirations. Now, on the one hand, that was a real blessing because I felt incredibly supported by a community of people who truly got me. But at the same time, it was also a curse because I felt exposed and manipulated in ways I had no control over and didn't appreciate. Today, I live in New York City with my family, which is the complete opposite of that tiny village. But as it turns out, you don't have to live in a small rural community to have someone watch and influence every step you take and every choice you make. That's because we all live in a digital village and we all have digital neighbors. Think of it this way. The data-crawling digital equivalent to my 60-year-old neighbor Klaus reads my Facebook messages, observes which news I read and share on X, collects my credit card purchases, tracks my whereabouts via my smartphone's GPS sensor, and records my facial expressions and casual encounters using some of the 50 million public cameras across the United States. And the same way, my village neighbors were able to integrate their observations about my daily life into an understanding of who I was and what I wanted, our data-crawling digital neighbors can turn what we do into highly intimate insights about who we are, and ultimately prescriptions of what we should do. I call this process psychological targeting, and the four remaining insights are dedicated to illustrating how it works, how it can be used to both hurt and help us, and how we can play life in the digital village to our advantage. Insight number two, algorithms are master snoopers. In 2015, my colleagues at Cambridge University published an article showing that with access to just 300 of your Facebook likes, an algorithm could predict your personality more accurately than your spouse. When I first heard about their findings, I was sure they had made a mistake. We call our spouses our other halves for a reason. They experience and live life with us almost every day. But it turns out that algorithms are indeed real master snoopers. They're incredibly adept at turning the breadcrumbs of your digital existence into a coherent narrative of who you are, which then in turn empowers them to influence you and your choices. So how do they become such formidable digital detectives? Well, for a starter, they have a lot to work with. You and I create about 6 gigabytes of data every hour. And a lot of this data is really intimate and far less curated than, say, our social media profiles. I bet there are questions you've asked Google that you wouldn't have felt comfortable asking even your closest friends or your partner. But what really elevates algorithms into the master snooper category and makes us humans pale in comparison is their ability to analyze the data of millions of people at the same time and detect patterns that you and I might have simply overlooked. Here's my favorite example. They use a first-person pronoun such as I, me, or myself. What do you think these words might say about you? My initial guess was narcissism. But as it turns out, talking about yourself doesn't make you a narcissist. It's actually a sign of emotional distress. Surprised? Well, so was I initially. But think about the last time you felt really down. What were you thinking about? The future of humanity? Quite unlikely. When we feel down, we typically think of ourselves. Why am I feeling so bad? Am I ever going to get better? And because we cannot constantly monitor our thoughts and feelings, this inner monologue creeps into the language we use and becomes available to our digital neighbors. Which leads me straight to insights number 3 and 4 that address the glaring question of what does all of this mean? What do we stand to lose or gain by having algorithms penetrate our minds and decode our psychology? Insight number 3. Don't fall for the "you have nothing to worry if you have nothing to hide" myth. When I discuss my work on psychological targeting in the classroom or some of the public talks I give, there are always a handful of people who respond to my cautionary tales with a comment about how they don't care about their privacy because they have nothing to hide. I somewhat understand the sentiment, but there are at least 2 problems with comments like this. First, not having to worry about your data and your privacy is a privilege that not everybody gets to enjoy, and that can be very fleeting. The 2022 Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade made this painfully real for American women. Within a matter of days, millions of women suddenly had to worry that their search histories, use of period tracking apps, online purchases, or GPS location data could be used against them. No matter how safe and comfortable you feel now, your data could be misused in the future. Because data is permanent, but leadership isn't. Second, giving up control over your data means more than just giving up privacy. It also means giving up your ability to make your own choices. Ever thought about buying life insurance? Well, as a life insurance company, I want to know if you're a little neurotic. If you are, I make sure to repeatedly target you with offers and leverage your anxiety to upsell you to the most expensive option. Granted, premium life insurance might be just what you need to put your mind at ease. But even if that's the case, the mere fact that I've singled you out as a potential target and got you to reach into your pocket a little bit deeper than you otherwise would have means that you didn't make the decision to buy life insurance alone. And then there are times when who you are, or at least who others think you are, eliminates options from your life's menu entirely. The Chinese government, for example, has rolled out profiling technology to predict their citizens' likelihood of voicing dissent and participating in protests. If a person's data suggests a short-tempered, paranoid, or overly meticulous personality, they might be placed under heavy surveillance or prevented from traveling to Beijing altogether. But it's not just autocratic regimes that use psychological targeting to determine what you can and cannot do. Say an algorithm concludes that you're rather disorganized and careless, this could easily prevent you from landing a job interview or securing a loan. The bottom line is that you can't take control over your life and the choices you make without control over your personal data and how it's being used. Insight number 4. Why it pays off to ask what if. I spent much of my early career researching and writing about the potential dangers of psychological targeting. But just like growing up in the village was both a curse and a blessing, I believe that psychological targeting holds enormous power to change our lives for the better. I've explored these opportunities in the form of what-if questions that provide a direct positive counter to every potentially nefarious use case. Here are a few examples. What if instead of enticing people to spend more, we could use psychological targeting to help them save? What if instead of exploiting people's emotional vulnerabilities for profit, we could use it to help them monitor and improve their mental health? Or what if, instead of burying us deeper and deeper in our own echo chambers, we could use psychological targeting to expand our view on the world? My research shows that all of these are possible, but I find the last one particularly intriguing. At the moment, companies like Facebook or Google use their predictive algorithms to cater to our existing preferences and reinforce our beliefs about the world. That not only makes us increasingly boring and unidimensional, but it also shatters our shared reality as a collective. But the same algorithms could also be used to accomplish the exact opposite. Help us step outside of our own shoes and start exploring the world from a viewpoint that we might never otherwise get to experience. I have no idea, for example, what the life of a 50-year-old farmer in Ohio might look like, or what the day-to-day experiences of a single mother in the suburbs of Chicago entail. But Facebook and Google do, and they could make these insights available to us in a heartbeat. As a starting point, they could let you explore the news feeds of other users who agree to be part of a perspective exchange or echo chamber swap. For a few hours, you could live your online life in their shoes and see what they see. Or how about an explorer mode with full control over whose echo chamber you visit, along with a digital guide powered by generative AI that helps you digest what you see? The impact of psychological targeting ultimately depends on us and how we use it. At its worst, psychological targeting manipulates, exploits, and discriminates. At its best, it engages, educates, and empowers. So how do we ensure that the digital village works for rather than against us? That's what the last insight is all about. Insight number 5. How to win the data game. The main lesson I've learned over the last 10 years is that navigating the digital village alone is a near impossible task. No one has the knowledge, time, and energy to manage their personal data all by themselves. We only have 24 hours in a day and hopefully better things to do than deciphering the legalese of all the terms and conditions we're signing off on. If we want to come out on top of the data game, we need to change its rules. Better regulation, for example, can help protect us from the most egregious abuses, but it typically does little to help us make the most of our data. For that, we need more flexible and dynamic forms of support. We need allies. Take the Swiss data corp MyData, for example. MyData acts as a trustee for its members, who can contribute to medical research and clinical studies by granting access to their personal health data on a case-by-case basis. Think of it like a bank account for health. Anyone can open an account and deposit copies of their medical records or any type of health data that is valuable in this context. MyData makes sure your data is securely stored in its collective vault and gives you full control over its use. You decide who to grant access to which particular type of data, and for what purposes. And you can withdraw your personal data at any point in time. But unlike your typical bank account, MyData isn't interested in generating profits. There are no ludicrous late fees. Its sole purpose is to maximize value for you and its other members. Any net profits that are generated from the use of your data get reinvested into making the services on the platform better. Similarly, as a member of MyData, you're not just a bank customer, you own the bank, literally. Control at MyData not only means control over your personal data, it also means having a direct say in the COBE's governance through a general assembly. Now, the value MyData generates for its members takes different shapes. You can share access to your data with third parties to improve your own health, for example, but you can also share your data to support scientific discovery, to help researchers better understand allergies, food sensitivities, or rare diseases. In many cases, the same application actually does both. Applications like MyData make me optimistic about the future. If we learn to play the data game right, the digital village could create opportunities that none of my neighbors or I in the old school analog version could have ever dreamt of. And it's up to us to make it happen. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy reading Mind Masters.